You're listening to The Naked Truth, Queer Artist Interviews. I'm Peter, your host, and together we're going to sit down and unzip with some amazing creators and learn the naked truth about their work, their lives, and what it means to make art as a queer person. Thanks for joining. This show explores the area of human sexuality and contains some adult content. Today, I'm joined by Heather Raquel Phillips. They are an unfixed, autonomous person of color living and working in Philadelphia as an interdisciplinary visual artist, educator, and independent curator, dedicated to creating equity in the spaces they inhabit. Their work has been written about in Philadelphia Gay News, Hyperallergic, Artform.com, and 60 Inches from Center. They recently had their memoir Vignettes published in The Black Scholar, Journal of Black Studies and Research, in issue 50.2, Black Radical Pleasure, and are currently working on a public art project in front of their residence, and have a public upcoming show at the Practice Gallery, date TBD. Heather, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is a reunion, I guess several years in the making, not since a show at the William Way Center in Philly. And before that, of course, we got to know each other being Mr. Maryland Leather and Miss Philadelphia Leather. So it's wonderful to have this as a nexus for reconnection.
Absolutely.
So can you talk a little bit about how art began for you? We'll get into how kink began as well, because it's clear that there's an inextricable aspect of that. But how did art begin for Heather?
It's a complex question, I think. I'll just kind of note back to when kids start getting uninterested in art, right? Because all kids are making art. And then there's a point, I think it's 8 years old, where kids start to either adhere to it or they say, I'm not really great at this thing. And I stayed with it. And I had a grandfather who was a painter. So he was like my number one advocate. He would kind of hold me back after family dinners. And I lived there for a little bit when I was a kid and give me these like extra art supplies and encouragement. So it started there, but it also was like, I was also a performer. I was in dance and gymnastics, and I was leaving my gymnastics classes and I was creating my own world. So I was a latchkey kid, and I had this, it was like probably something that covered electric things for the apartment building we lived in. But it was right outside of my bedroom window. And so it was a stage. So I used to like have these performances out there. And I always was directing and choreographing dances for my friends. And I just had this whole fantasy world that I was able to check in and out of through my childhood. And so those things kind of came together. I was like, oh, okay, like this is all me. And now it's making sense. Like now I can kind of mash it all together and make it into like this like succotash, you know?
But you chose a delicious thing to decide to make it into. That touches on a few things in my mind. One is, of course, the multidisciplinary aspect. The other aspect I was going to highlight was the community building. It wasn't just you on that stage that you had created outside of your window. But you brought your friends over. You made a whole production out of it.
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely collaboration, definitely performance. These are ideas, I think, that even when I reflect back on them, there was always this kind of queer aspect to my work that wasn't validated until I was grown. And I had a really hard time finding my way into that space. And for a long time, I thought about my work in a certain way, but when I looked at the page, it wasn't there. To be edgy, to push boundaries, to make people think, to make people feel uncomfortable. All these things that like, I wanted to just kind of play with all of that. And then I would look at like a photographic image that I made, but it just wasn't there. It was like, I would like think about it, like, yeah, like, and then I'd look and I'd be like, that is really tame. They weren't syncing up, but it was there. Like the desire was there. It just had to literally come into the work.
Where do you think that desire came from?
The desire is probably to be seen, immortalized as a valid, fully formed human being, standing in one's own truth, no matter what that truth is. It's so hard to navigate the world especially through different parts of your identity that might be marginalized or in different spaces, it means different things. And I think that at the bottom of it, we just want to be who we are and have people just accept that in a way, respect it, not challenge you for being true to yourself.
At the same time, that who you are is someone who challenges, is someone who, in making that statement, is setting themselves apart.
Yeah, interesting. I guess I don't really ever think about it kind of in that way. You know, I think I've been contrary since I was a teenager. You know, there was a mark in time where I took hold of my exterior in a way. So I was growing up in a small town and my parents had split. So I just had my mom and her family and it was a very white town and I was in a very white family. Like I received my first racial slur when I was in second grade. And I've been considering this a lot lately, like upon hearing other people and when they heard it for the first time. And I can still be there in that space as that kid. And I think about that and I didn't have anybody to go talk to about that. I held that for years all by myself. So that's where I was, right? So when I became a teenager and I changed schools, I moved and changed schools. And I just kind of like, I leaned deeply. I was already getting my feet kind of in there. I was already like in the alternative kind of realm. But then I just like dove in. This is what I'm doing. It was goth punk skater kind of. And, you know, and I'm talking like this is the late 80s. So I was the only girl in that school. And it was a big school. Only girl there doing that. So I was ridiculed. But I loved it because I was making choices and they weren't doing it because of something I had no control over.
You were controlling your difference.
Yes. And it wasn't that I didn't hear anything derogatory after that in terms of like my racial identity or, you know, but it wasn't the forefront. So I felt like, you know, I was okay with that. And my whole response was fuck off.
Yep.
The buses would ride by me and they'd be screaming out Beetlejuice. They'd be screaming all sorts of shit to me. I just walked with my middle finger in there. I didn't care. I don't want to be linked in with them. I knew that I wanted to move to the city. I had three goals. It was to move to the city, to go to art school, and to buy a house on my own. So I moved the fuck out as soon as I could. I think I was 19 and lived right off South Street with a friend, moved in with a friend, and never looked back. I mean, I've seen people that I went to school with, and I have no idea who they are, and they know me, because I stood out, you know. Mm-hmm. I probably made more friends after high school from my high school than I did while I was there.
If we're talking about that period, the late 80s, early 90s, that's also a very fraught time to be a queer person. So would you be comfortable sharing anything about your experience in terms of your journey as it relates to your sexuality and especially maybe as it intersects with that time period?
Well, the interesting thing is I give up art for a long period of time when I move over to the city, kind of out of that world, and I'm into living. I was having problems. I was having substance abuse problems. I was drinking a lot, you know, kind of taking whatever passed through my hand. But drinking was my thing. You know, I always had a hard time being out with people because I'm so introverted and also tend to be very shy and reserved. So I was like out, I was working in bars, I was working in all these strip clubs all over the city. And that's what I did and explored the city. When I look at it, despite all the strife that I had internally because of the drinking, it was such an exploration of the world as a young person with like nothing holding them down and nothing holding them back. And I was dating women and I was dating men and I was just doing whatever I wanted and I was having a lot of sex. Yeah, it was just all over the place. And it's such a blend and such a mishmash, but I was choosing all of these little things that I saw from people, decorating or the way somebody was free or...
Do you think that your contrarian attitude up to this point and already having rejected so many expectations laid a groundwork where there wasn't really much of an internal struggle of feeling attraction to both sexes, for instance, or to any of the shenanigans you got up to?
Yeah, I think I always had these kind of beliefs. You know, since I was a teenager, probably, there were certain things that I just believed. And one of them was the flexibility of gender. And I didn't really understand it. And of course, like, language helps us with these things. But like, when I was young, I always felt a little bit like a boy around like my girlfriends. And I always was interested and curious about like these differences about like presentation. And I can remember like looking in the mirror, like making drawings of anatomy. I can remember looking in the mirror and like making myself look like a boy. I mean, you know, like, it just was always curious. Now, to me, it makes sense. I feel like we'd just be all better off if it was just like gone and we could just be who we are and have that freedom. And I think the same thing with sexuality. I think as a woman, especially as a woman who's femme presenting, I think that you're allowed to explore your sexuality in a way that other people aren't, you know, given the green light to. If you're doing it for show, it's okay. But if you're not, it's not okay. And I can remember getting kicked out of a bar because a woman and I were kissing. You know what I mean? In an after hours bar, like, where drugs are just like, you know, floating through the veins of everybody in there and, you know, like all sorts of crazy shit's happening. But we were kissing and we were asked to leave because it wasn't for consumption.
So going then one step further into this exploration, because kink is part of your activism, part of your art, part of your public persona, can we talk a bit about your exploration of kink, the way that got started, and the role that has played in your work? And I don't know if it was a direct prompt for you to re-engage with art, but maybe talking about those things will get to answer those questions.
I'm not wholly sure. I don't really know. I think that it just was in the trajectory at some point, stripping interest in sexuality, like just coming close with people who had all these multitudes about them in terms of sexuality, in terms of the spectrum of LGBTQIA+, right? Like, I was just making friends with people, being in sex work, working across the street from a leather shop. I was just around it. I was around sexuality. It wasn't just confined to the leather shop. It was like being in, like, you know, a strip club outside of the center city proper and having like a grown man, you know, who looked like someone's dad in a baseball shirt, flash me his black lace bra. People have their things. It's okay.
Yeah.
You know, just like, never had an interest in playing the role of this like kind of damsel in distress, and like I wanted to explore. And so I did have explorations with partners.
Sure.
In terms of like trying things out and figuring out what I liked and what I didn't, but it was everything. I don't know. Nature, nurture.
Well, I want to get into some of your art because it is wonderful. From the photos that are presented on your website, I want to talk about the first three that are available. And while that sounds like a cop-out in terms of my own digging around, it's because there's a commonality between all of them. I don't know if they were part of a series.
Yeah, you're right in reading them together. So that's a series of reclining nudes. They're all kind of based in this reflection on art historical paintings mm-hmm. of women and the male gaze, also like the gaze back and what the subject can do when they are confronting the viewer, which is something that I return to often in my work. They started with me looking at Modigliani and
Manet, maybe?
Yeah, Olympia. Looking at these reclining nudes and thinking about representation. And so I started taking all these photographs, and I did a larger size woman, and then I did a more mature woman, and then I did a more ambiguous woman. And I was trying to like also remove these parts that like people capitalize on. So removing like nipples, removing the ability to see these like bits. And so I was like trying to subvert in that way. What it all came back to was that final image that I wound up making. I tend to do things and then I make a final cut. And so I made that image of Monique that's sitting with the purple and gold background with the afro. And she's a painter, And she had just done a painting of this classic Afro chick on black velvet. There's an image of it in The Shining, and it hangs over Scatman Carruthers' bed. In that image, it's like tits and ass all out, you know. But, you know, Monique's not built like that. She's got a lot of ambiguity about through her gender and through her physicality and her race. And so it was nice, like, to have this body be there and such a strong gaze at the viewer. Like, there's no mistaking that she's owning what she's holding there. That's what became the success to me. And then that led into kind of exploring these other areas with representing the trans body in that space of reclining nude, representing a bearded body, surfacely read as female, also a trans subject. So thinking about those things and who gets represented and who gets to have sexuality and who is allowed to be seen or to be desired.
I feel like these three images, and I know that there are others in this series, they each empower the subject with their own sexuality. So it's not that they are being gazed at, but as you said, they are reflecting that gaze. And I feel like each are framed in front of mirrors, or in the case of the middle one, the futuristic one, the background is very reflective, so that in each of them, in their composition and everything, you are looking at them. And if you were there in the room, you would also be looking at yourself looking at them. They're just gorgeously composed in terms of the shot, the lighting, and subject, where there is strength, there is eroticism. And I love the idea of the bits that are being held back, because that is maybe the power of these figures in this sexual stance, is that they are the ones in control of how much they reveal.
Absolutely. One thing that I'll say that you began that with is how they're framed. And since I started taking photographs, I've always worked with the body. It was always important to me that I elevated my subjects, that I made them feel proud of the image that I took of them, that I made them look like a powerful human being, that I was able to translate their autonomy, their sovereignty. You know, I don't have a desire to photograph, you know, quote unquote, beautiful people. You know, I have plenty of people. I have a camera. People are, oh, if you ever need a model, I'm like, don't need one, you know, because I want that to be focused on people who aren't represented enough.
The kind of person who wouldn't approach you to say, oh, if you ever need a model, because they maybe don't think of themselves as model material.
Exactly. And what does that even mean, right? Because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Beauty is subjective. And beauty is a whole lot more than what we see on a magazine page.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but also the eye of the beholder has been dunked in the saline solution of white Western beauty standards since they came out of the womb.
Yes. And how do we even know? I talk about this a lot with my own femininity. That's why I love leather and I love like kink events, because you can really just double down into that stuff. And it took a while to figure out what it was that I wanted to express in those spaces. But like, where do I find my power? It's like, I love wearing my like high ponytail, because in that space, like that feels like power to me. There are certain moves that I take that make that feel like access your weapons, you know, my heels, my fingernails, whatever that may be. I think about that often with that part of my expression, because on a day-to-day basis, right, depending on how I am presenting, I'm like, well, do I like that?
Or is that conditioned?
It's hard to discern. And I think of, and have, since I can remember, I think of my clothing as costume. And every day I'm picking a costume for how I feel for that day.
We wear costumes for ourselves as well as for others.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about your work in relation to your sexuality and a larger community?
My work doesn't exist without community. It's been an interesting challenge during this, you know, shelter in place, because I have found another way to deal with that on my own. But to me, it's pure magic. It's pure magic. I set things up and I have a framework and I go in and I know what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to utilize this space. And my work is very DIY. I want a sense of urgency to come across. What I have to say is important. It might be abstract, but it's important. And I want people to like understand that it's immediate. So I'm doing things super low budget. I'm giving you a handheld kind of witnessing, and I'm going in with a framework. So like for extracurricular activity, I had this kind of map made out. I'm going to have all these characters and they're going to represent these different things. So I plugged in the A-Team, you know, the television show, the A-Team?
Uh-huh.
This is the formula that I'll use. Now mm-hmm. you don't have to know that to watch it.
Right.
So I go in and now I'm like, okay, so this is your character. This is what you represent. This is what's happening to you. You're going to receive this crank call and they're saying this to you. You know, there's a part where, and it's one of my best friends, he's in the bathtub and he receives a crank call and she's asking him if he likes all these fruits. And she asks him if he likes bananas. And then she hangs up and she's laughing. She's laughing hysterical. So he hangs up the phone and then he sucks on a banana. Like he gives a banana fellatio. And when I show that, I always tell people, I didn't tell him to do that. You know, just want to make it clear. I didn't tell him to do that. When Max eats the sloppy Joe and all of the shit is falling out of it. And then he licks the plate. I didn't say lick the plate. That's the magic. Like, that's the stuff that my community is doing. Like, they pick up where I leave off. I cannot possibly make the things happen. Community, without it, my work doesn't exist. So it's, you know, I think it does a couple things. It allows people to access this creativity that they might not get going to work at a 9-to-5 job. Or it allows them input, it allows them their own autonomy in the space, like they're part of the creation of this thing. So I have people that I work with everything. I have people that I talk to like through every decision I'm making. And I'm like, hey, I'm thinking this. And then they give me some crazy other idea, you know? All my friends, they all have their identities too. None of them fit neatly anywhere either. Or they don't want to. And so we all kind of come together and it's like, we're all a little bit different, but we're all experiencing the same thing. Our voices are being silenced or we're struggling here, but we're all strong and resilient. Everybody I use, they're my heroes because they persist unapologetically.
I'm going to frame your experience and your life in terms of nakedness. So where, in a sense, either physical or figurative, spiritual, again, about community maybe, where is it that you feel comfortable being naked?
That's really funny. I call myself a never nude. You know that, like...
From Arrested Development?
It's funny. I'm so conscious about that in a literal sense. And it originated in shyness, but then I became like... a stripper.
Talk about a plot twist.
Yeah. I think because I have a deep fear of a lack of control of my own nudity, I just like to have control over that. I like to not have people to have access to it in a way.
Or you control that access.
So
which stripping in some ways is the ultimate version of that.
Exactly. You know, and I was okay with it. And I'm glad that I did it. And I'm glad that I got that experience. It gave me a sense of control. And then I knew I had control over my body. So in public, I could be wearing the smallest clothes in the world because I like to show off. I mean, I think, you know, you're an exhibitionist too. And so am I. So I like that, but I have to have full control over it. In terms of nakedness, yeah, like my happiest space in terms of like just being vulnerable or making those films or making those kind of like that sextra body of work. That to me is where I'm like bearing my heart and soul. That was the place I was trying to get to in my artwork. I stopped thinking about my mom looking over my shoulder. And guess what? I made that shit and she loves it. You know, like, I mean, who would have thought?
That's just wonderful. So then the last thing, and this is going to be a real wraparound to even before we began recording, is framing this within the COVID-19 pandemic. That's the whole reason for this podcast and why I'm hoping to help us connect all more during this time. Can you talk about, let's say, things like going outside and meeting with people and that kind of thing are possible again and not fraught with an implicit danger of an outbreak or something? Can you share with us something that you're looking forward to when we get to that point of larger public safety when it comes to the pandemic?
You know, Peter, it's hard for me to answer that because I love this so much. No, I'm fearing going back into the world. I take a walk every day. I have quality time. Like, I'm used to working like 4 jobs and it's so tiring. And I'm just like, oh, this is just wonderful. You know, I've never had unemployment before in my life. And I'm very, very fortunate to be able to receive it now. Of course, it's not enough to get me through an extended period of time. But I do. I kind of fear going back more than I fear being in this space, because getting so much content and so much time to just like make things and think about things and do research and then also just relax. So yeah, I don't know that that answers your question, but yeah, you know, otherwise I'll be happy to see friends again. I don't want to sit in a room with my mom and not wear a mask.
It does boil down to that. You know, there's a lot of activities that I look forward to doing again. There's a lot of people that I look forward to doing again, but it's, you know, it's something as primal and simple as that. It's just being able to sit in a space with someone you love. But in the meantime, I'm so heartened to hear that this, for you in your microcosm, even as the macrocosm of the world burning continues, that you are in the eye of the tornado and that it's calm where you are, that you have reflection and a chance to relax.
Thank you. Yeah. I haven't put it out there very much because I realize that not everybody has that ability. You know, I do have mental health issues that I deal with and I know how to deal with them. There's a lot of privilege that I hold. So I don't really put it out into the world. Like, I love this, but I have enjoyed it.
Well, I really appreciate your honesty. I hope that your art and your generosity helps other people who might be having a harder time of this. Also, just a very quick plug for maybe what you're working on at this very moment. People can engage with your art just going by your house. Can you talk a little bit more about that public art installation? I mean, that seems to be a way that you're pretty tangibly interacting with the world, even from your hidey hole.
Yeah, that's been important to me. And I actually think I've gotten somewhere nice with it that I feel really kind of, I don't know, proud is the word. But so I'm beginning this. It's actually going to open Friday. It's a public art space on the front of my home. So I've hung a bunch of brackets and flagpoles, and I've invited a number of artists, and that will continue to grow. And what I'm going to do is just curate an evolving, changing, daily kind of changing space of messages through flags and banners that people are working with. Some will be pretty straightforward. I've got a diverse group of makers that are loaning me work. It's going to be interesting because I'm not personally going to put my address on the web. I will heavily document this and I will tell people who I trust to have my address that they can come look at it. And the same with the artist. This goes back to the stripping too, because stalking is real.
Yeah, of course.
But yeah, I was planning on starting it on Friday because Friday is Loving Day, which is the anniversary of the Loving versus Virginia case. Mm-hmm. So to celebrate interracial couples not being illegal, I am going to probably start with this flag I'm working on right now, which is an homage to all of Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson's children. But I did begin. I did, just to rewind, it was George Floyd's death inspired me to make a banner that said, "I can't breathe." And that felt like the right time to really start putting a message on my house. So I started with that. And now I will get into the multiple pieces rotating, and I'm working on making it a space that the community can engage with. And my community is very old fashioned and sometimes difficult. Right now, working on having flyers outside that people can grab and get a little info. And I'm going to sit out there, you know, every now and again, just spend an hour or two sitting outside. So in case anybody wants to engage with me and, you know, gain some insight or have some useful conversations, it'll be available to them.
It sounds wonderful. You put yourself out there yet again in yet another way.
Yeah, trying. I mean, this is the time for artists, right? Like, and I shouldn't say that because not everybody can make, you know what I mean? Maybe some people are in incubation periods right now. Maybe this situation of sheltering in place is way too stressful for some people. But, you know, with all of the political upheaval and the uprising and the pandemic, it's like we'll be hearing about this through artwork for a while.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Heather, and especially in how vulnerable you're making yourself through making your own home a public art place. Please stay safe.
I will. I really appreciate it, Peter.
Thanks for spending some time with us on The Naked Truth. If you want to learn more about this episode's artist, be sure to look through the links in the podcast description. Please consider how you can support the creative people on this show and in your community. Art helps us all get through. And that's The Naked Truth.